you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts and the actions of all our lives be acceptable to you, O Lord. Amen. And the table will be wide, and the welcome wide, and the arms will open wide to gather us in, and our hearts will open wide to receive. This is part of a poem by Dan Richardson, and it's inspiration for today's sermon title as we begin looking to gather with Christians around the world for World Communion Sunday next week. You'll hear the rest of it later as part of the sermon, and then also as an invitation as we come to communion today. But the table is the focal point of hospitality in pretty much all cultures. And not surprisingly, Jesus spent a lot of time around the table. We see this especially in the Gospel of Luke. There are more references to eating, banquets, and sitting or reclining around tables than in any other of the Gospels. And sometimes he is the host. So we think about the feeding of the 5,000. Sometimes he's a guest at like the houses of Levi or the Pharisees or Mary and Martha. Sometimes we're not quite sure whether he is the guest or the host as we think about things like the meal at Emmaus, where he becomes, first of all, the guest, and then it turns into him being the host at the table. But seriously, it's been said that his disciples literally eat his way through the Gospels. That Jesus and his disciples go from place to place, house to house, one meal after another, always looking for the next invitation, inviting people in and being invited in. And woven into those moments at the table, Jesus tells stories about hospitality and the way it works in God's kingdom. It's as it's at those dining situations that Jesus does much of his teachings. He tells many of his parables there, and he hangs out with those who are marginalized, or considered marginalized in our society. And for Jesus, the dinner table is the primary place for fellowship, discussion, and for ministry. The first thing you should know about is how hospitality worked in the first century. And hospitality is probably the one rule of social conduct that was absolutely required of people. And if someone showed up at your doorstep in the middle of the night asking for food, you were to give it. If a stranger happened upon you having no place to stay, you were to invite him in to stay at your house. Opening up your home to your relatives and friends and strangers and eating around a common table was the strength of the culture. And celebrations within the life of the community were always marked with great feasts. And the normal process for holding a great banquet, say a wedding banquet, would be to send out a save-the-date type of invitation to your guests. And once you heard back from your guests, you would then prepare the feast on the appropriate day. And it's during those times, a host would need a significant amount of lead time in order to prepare, to know how many animals to butcher, to know how much food to prepare was essential to a successful banquet. And then after all the food was ready, on the day of the banquet, when it was all ready, the host would send out an invitation to come. Now it is ready. That's exactly what happened in our parable of the great banquet this morning. That the host had invited his guest ahead of time, and now the time for the feast had arrived, and the host had made all the necessary preparations, which probably took several days, if not even weeks, to prepare. And then he sent out word to his guest that the banquet was ready to begin. But in the intervening time between the original invitation, when it was extended and the banquet was ready, the circumstances of the guests had changed somewhat. They found themselves with other priorities at that moment. Now, we shouldn't be quick to minimize their reasons for backing out of attending the banquet. Real estate investment, a new set of oxen, a marriage, none of these were trivial matters back then. The real estate investment was concerned with the financial security of the entire family. one's livelihood depended upon whether the oxen could work or not. Spending time laying the groundwork for a lifetime of partnership with the spouse is foundational work. The excuses the guests offer up aren't insignificant. They're real concerns that the people had. But in the context of the great banquet, they pale in comparison. We know the rest of the story. The servant is sent out then to invite the poor and the lame, and there's still room at the banquet table. And he's sent out again to invite those outside the city in the highways and the byways. We can quickly arrive at the moral of the story. You be careful not to be too busy to pass up an invitation from God, to join him at his kingdom table, to be careful not to ignore the summons of God to be fed by him. Elisha's mother called the family to supper. Everything was set on the table and was starting to get cold. Jason, the teenager's son, rushed downstairs and grabbed a plateful of food and took it back upstairs. Elisha came into the room whining, "I'm not hungry," holding an empty bag of potato chips in her hands, where she had been snacking all day. Her father grabbed a plate and took it into the living room to watch TV. So how are we treating God's invitation? I wonder what God thinks sometimes of our response to his invitation. You know, do we walk around with, you know, walk up to him with our empty potato chip bag saying, "I'm not hungry for your banquet. I've been snacking all week on the junk food, and let me come some other time. I'm not hungry now." We often react to his invitation with indifference because we're not always hungry. So we've been snacking on the junk food of the world and setting some of the wrong priorities in our lives and not lining up our priorities for him. And so we fill ourselves with things that don't truly satisfy. But Jesus is saying to us, "Everything is ready. Come. I have peace for your troubled soul. I have rest for your weary hearts. I have healing for your sick bodies. I have the refreshing you so desperately need. I have food for the journey ahead." So do we accept the invitation for what our souls truly need? But if the parable was just about getting to the moral of the story, we would miss out on the riches and depth of this the story has, because there's so much more there. See, this story is also an allegory. It's a story that is really telling a story about something else. Consider a moment the first invitation that was offered. The prophets of Israel had already extended that save-the-date invitation hundreds of years before. They spoke about a day that was coming when God's kingdom would be established on earth. That kingdom was marked by a great banquet in God's kingdom. Jesus' listeners would have heard Isaiah's words, "On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all people a feast of rich foods, a feast of well-aged wine." So God had already invited his people to his feast of the kingdom. He had already invited them to come and have fellowship with him, to have communion with him. He told about the days that were coming when he would send the Messiah to save his people from slavery, oppression, hunger, sickness, and despair, and invite them into fellowship with him. The Israelites had heard the invitation. They lived their lives in response to that, anticipating the arrival of God's Messiah, anticipating the time when the banquet would be ready. And when God was ready, he sent another invitation to his people. "The time of waiting is over. The time has come when I will save the world and establish my rule among the nations. And all will be fed with my very presence. Here is my son, with whom I am well pleased." Jesus had gone all about Galilee, summoning people to the great supper. This was the moment they had been waiting for, and they found sometimes that they had often more pressing concerns. So God expanded his invitation to include all the people who had been dismembered from the community of God's people, the poor, the crippled, the blind, those considered unclean, disenfranchised, those considered outcast. But there was still room in God's kingdom, and they came willingly and eagerly, amazed at being included in God's feast. And there was still more room at the table, and so God sent out an invitation. This time was outside the city to the Gentiles. The parable of the great banquet isn't just about accepting the personal invitation of God to join him at the table, but it's about the entire history of God's salvation to the world. It's about his relationship with people that he chose to be the light to all the nations. It's about the remembering, the bringing back into the fellowship those who have been outcast. It's about God's expanding his kingdom to include all people from all places and all situations. There's room for all at God's table and then some. It really is a feast for all people. God's hospitality is expansive and generous and without equal. This is the good news. We should also note this parable comes right after on the heels of two other stories that Jesus tells about humility at the table. That true hospitality isn't jockeying for position, and isn't driven for those by what you can get in return. The true hospitality is about generosity without concern for recognition or what we'll get in return. And the hospitality of God's banquet table is where God extends an invitation without condition. That all are invited to the abundant feast. As we think about the feast that Jesus invites us to, there's three things I really want us to think about and kind of take away today. First, we have to think about how do we respond to God's summons in our life to come to the table. We might have all kinds of perfectly reasonable excuses for not putting everything aside to show up for God's kingdom party. But when compared to the living with God and his kingdom and being fed with food that doesn't run out, all other reasons become merely distractions and diversions because everything is ready and all we have to do is come to him. But to show up, we might mean adjusting some of our priorities so that we can come to the table. And we also need to make sure that we're hungry for what God provides. That are not filling up on some of the junk food of the world, but are truly hungry for what truly satisfies in life. Secondly, as Christians who have heard the summons of God and have responded by joining him at the table, in what ways are our tables of hospitality an extension or a sign of God's kingdom table? What does it mean to celebrate God's kingdom so that all people may find the good news, too, that they may enjoy the party as well? Most of us probably don't have a problem with the fact that God welcomes all to his table, but we also have to realize that call to invite others to ours as well. Viewing our tables as an extension of God's table. As we considered how we are a people through who God shines his light, and we are a people, the church, the body of Christ, whom God uses to point out his presence in our midst, we are the ones to call to expand the table of fellowship and love with one another. Let's take a look at this clip. tables become tables of hospitality that reflects God's table. Where there's no vying for positions or recognition or honor, where we don't respect anything in return. Tables at which the generosity of God overflows and poured out for all. Of course, we're using the table as a metaphor for how we can include one another in our lives, where people can experience God's love and grace. So where are those places? Those places where we can invite others in to share in that. Who else might we consider inviting? So all will know the welcome, the hospitality, the care, the filling up of God's love and grace. For the table is indeed wide. So what are ways we can extend the table? I think about other ways that our church works to extend the table. I think about Phoenix Rising that reaches out into our community. I think about the money that we raised for disaster response and that then went to support mission teams, disaster response teams that went down to go and respond to the situations there. I think about the many ways that we can live into that. You know, and finally, when we hear that summons of Christ to come to the table, we are compelled to come and be part of this wonderful party, we recognize that it goes far beyond us. See, because when we are participating in this incredible long history of salvation that doesn't start with us, but which we are graciously included. And there's room enough for all. Isn't that incredible to think about that we are part of God's work of salvation throughout history? That we play a part in that? Isn't that exciting? So again, how do we widen the table? Sharing the good news in Jesus Christ. To continue more of Jaron Richardson's poem, and we will become bread for a hungering world. We become drink for those who thirst. And the blessed will become the blessing. And everywhere will be the feast. How can we extend the table? For the table is indeed wide. Thanks be to God. And so we come to the table where we are all invited. As an invitation, I do want to read the entire